Welcome to Wall Street Unspun with your host, Peter Schiff.
But it's a giant bubble in search of a pin, and it's going to find one.
Are you confused with the ups and downs of the economy and what it means to you?
Don't believe the propaganda, and that's what it is. When you're listening to an analyst on a lot of these popular financial shows, you're not getting investment advice. You're getting propaganda.
Get ready to untangle the web of misinformation provided by the mainstream media.
These firms are trying to sell you stocks. Their real clients, their banking clients, are trying to get rid of stock.
And now, here's your host of Wall Street Unspun, the president of Euro Pacific Capital and a licensed broker with a passion for truth. It's Wall Street Unspun with Peter Schiff.
Hi, everybody, and welcome again to another live episode of Wall Street Unspun. This is Peter Schiff at Euro Pacific Capital. Do the show live every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific. You can hear this show on the Europac website, Europac, EUROPAC.net, on shortwave radio, 5.07 megahertz. I am taking calls live, 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597. I want to thank Mike Pinto for sitting in for me last Wednesday on Rosh Hashanah. Hopefully, Mike Pinto did a good job. I didn't have a chance to hear the show, but I'm sure he did well, and thank him for participating and everybody who called in my absence. Anyway, we got a lot to talk about today, a lot happening in the currency markets, in the precious metals markets. First, let me make a bit of an announcement. You know, on my social media sites, my YouTube channel, Schiff Report, just today went over 30,000 subscribers. I forget when I started it, maybe about a year ago or so. But, you know, I really think it should have a lot more people subscribing to that YouTube channel. So if you don't make a habit of, visiting my YouTube channel, you should. I'm doing at least two video blogs a week. They're very informative. So if you're not checking out my YouTube videos, you should go to the Schiff Report on YouTube and subscribe to the report so that you know when I have a new video up there. You know, also, if you are listening to my YouTubes, you know, I really want to get more subscribers. I think I should have on my YouTube channel, we just went over 30,000 subscribers today, and I'd like to try to get that up to at least 50,000. I should have a lot more people listening. I think the videos are very informative. And so if you're currently a subscriber to the YouTube channel, tell some of your friends about it. You know, send out some emails. Let people know that they should subscribe to my videos. I think it's important if we can get more people watching the Schiff YouTube videos that maybe they'll be higher up on YouTube, and maybe more people will find them because YouTube will feature them if there's more views there. So, again, you know, invite your friends, send out emails, and invite them to subscribe to the Schiff Report on YouTube. You know, also I have a Facebook page, the Peter Schiff Facebook page. There's now over 39,000, I think about 39,200 fans on the Facebook page. So if you're not now on the Facebook page, you might want to sign up on that. I'm going to be trying to take over that page or do some more admin. You know, ever since the campaign ended, it's kind of been in limbo. And so I haven't really been able to do anything with it. I noticed some spam is building up on there, and I want to try to do that. Just unfortunately, some of the people that used to work on the campaign are being very slow to call me and return the admin on that page back to me so I can work on it. But anyway, if you're not currently a fan on my Facebook page, you might want to join there as well and get other people to sign up for the Facebook page. Also, I want to let everybody know what my plans are with radio. I am in the process of trying to set up a daily radio show to replace Wall Street Unspun. I do this show every week, and I've done it for the last 5 or 6 years or so, every Wednesday night. My plan right now is to discontinue Wall Street Unspun and to turn radio into a daily a show for maybe 2 or 3 hours per day. My plan is for the show to be on regular radio, not just my website and shortwave, to be a regular radio show. I'm going to try to do it from a station here in Connecticut and hopefully syndicate the show nationwide. The show will also hopefully, be simulcast on the internet, maybe shortwave as well. So everybody around the country should be able to listen to the show even prior to my ability to get a syndication deal. So I am working on that now. I don't know how long it's going to take before I can get this show up and running. It might be another couple of months before I locate the appropriate radio show in Connecticut to carry it or get the right deal, but that is something that is in the works now. So continue to listen for updates on Wall Street Unspun. When we ultimately make the switch, I'll let everybody know, I'll let all the listeners to this program know that the show is coming to an end, but that my radio appearances are not coming to an end. In fact, they will be more frequent. My goal is to do a daily radio show, 2, maybe 3 hours per day. It will be a call-in show. And, I think with what's happening right now in the global economy and in the U.S. economy, and with the extent to which I believe our economy is going to deteriorate over the next few years, I think daily updates on radio are going to be very important, that we have a real voice out there that understands the problems, that can be a messenger, a voice of reason, insanity in what will surely be an insane country. Believe me, things are going to get extremely bad in the United States over the next several years. And it's important that people understand the source of the problem, that it is not the free market, that it is government. It is government policy. It is socialism. It is statism. It is the welfare state. It is central banking. It is everything that the government is doing to fix the problems. That is why the problems are going to get so much worse in the years ahead. And I think it's important that my voice be out there, not simply on this radio show, but on radio shows where we can attract a much, much larger audience, because it is very important that people understand the true nature of these problems if we ever, ever have any hope to solve them. Right now, unfortunately, solving our problems is not even on the radar screen. We are still making them worse. And even if the Republicans manage to recapture the House or the Senate in the next election, I have very little hope that they will do the right thing. I still believe that the majority in the Republican Party still believe in Keynesianism, still believe in government stimulus. They just want the stimulus to take the form of maybe tax cuts. But there is no real desire on the part of Republicans yet, I believe, to make serious cuts in government spending. And, it could be the one chance that Barack Obama has at getting reelected is for the Republicans to take the House and or the Senate. Because at least 2 years from now, if the Republicans control Congress and the economy is in much worse shape than it is today, which it will be, regardless of what happens in these elections, at least it will give Obama an opportunity to blame the Republican Congress for obstructing his agenda and preventing him from fixing the problems that he'll blame on Bush. So, if the Republicans win in November, that could be the best thing to happen to Barack Obama if he wants to get reelected. I think if the Democrats maintain control of the House and the Senate, there is no chance that President Obama will get reelected, because he will own lock, stock, and barrel the complete disaster that awaits us for 2012. Anyway, from politics, let's go to a little bit to the markets. Yesterday, gold prices surged almost $30 an ounce. Gold hit a new all-time record high. Silver prices hit a new 52-week high. They hit another 52-week high today. Silver is above $20 an ounce. When I first started buying silver, when I first signed my agreement with the Perth Mint in Australia back in 2001 or so, silver was under $5 an ounce. I still have silver that I bought for myself in the fours. And here it is now over $20 an ounce. I still think it's going a lot higher. I still think silver is closer to the lows than the highs. The same thing with gold. And it's amazing, when you look at everybody on television trying to explain the gold market, the bull market, and of course the people who are talking about it, most of them don't own any gold, so they have no idea why people are buying it. The most popular reason that people ascribe to people buying gold, they say, well, people are buying gold because of all the uncertainty out there. Well, I've been buying gold for 10 years. I've been advising my clients to buy gold for 10 years. And I can tell you one thing, there is no uncertainty in my mind. I am buying gold because I am certain of certain things. And the things that I am certain of is that governments will continue to undermine their currencies. They will continue to print money. They will continue to create inflation. And because I am certain that that is going to happen, I want to own gold. So it's not uncertainty that causes me to buy gold, but certainty. Right? I am certain the government will do the wrong thing, that the Federal Reserve will continue to do the wrong thing, and that's why I am convinced that gold and silver over the long run have only one way to go, and that's up. And so far, for the last 10 years, I've been dead right on those forecasts. Now, of course, there's no guarantee that I'm going to continue to be right, as far as I'm concerned, all the reasons that I've been buying gold for the last 10 years, they've all borne out. I think my decision to do that was correct. You know, it's interesting for my clients. You know, I own, as I've mentioned many times on this show, I have 50% or more of my own personal portfolio is in gold stocks. And of course, when I make recommendations to my clients at Euro Pacific Capital, I don't recommend nearly as aggressive a gold portfolio. But the reason I've done that wasn't because I wasn't convinced gold was going to go up. I was. That's why I do it with my own money. It's just that I don't want to recommend that people do that and then be wrong, because you know I don't want to set myself up for some kind of a lawsuit. I know that the conventional wisdom is that you know gold should be such a small portion of your portfolio, and so for me to recommend a very high percentage, and then if I happen to have been wrong, I probably would have set myself up for all sorts of lawsuits based on the way the securities industry works. So despite the fact that personally I was confident that gold would do so well, and gold stocks, which are up over 1,000% in the last year, despite my personal conviction of that, that is not what I've recommended other people do, because that is not considered prudent. In fact, you know, I mean, even the foreign stocks that I recommend are not considered prudent by the government, by the regulators, by the conventional wisdom. But at least in my opinion, telling somebody to buy dividend-paying foreign stocks would be more acceptable to the main regulators than telling them to buy gold. I mean, that they would think, oh, that's crazy to tell people to put all their money in gold or gold stock. So I temper it back quite a bit. And I still don't recommend that people follow my advice if they copy me and have half their money in gold stocks. But, you know, if they do that, they do that. I mean, you got to take the risk. But I always recommend that people have a percentage of their money in gold and gold stocks. And I continue to make those recommendations, not because of uncertainty, but because of certainty. In my mind, I am absolutely certain what is going to happen. And it's because I am certain of what's going to happen that I'm buying gold. You know, but perhaps the people who don't understand why the gold bugs are buying gold, or they like to ascribe it to uncertainty because they don't want to admit that the real reason we're buying gold is because we know how screwed up this country is and how much worse the problems are going to get because of the government printing money. Now, on the currency front, yesterday, we had a new all-time record high in the Swiss franc, all-time record high. It took out that high again today before backing off, so we're back down below a dollar. We were well above a dollar this morning on the Swiss franc. The Japanese yen hit a high since the highest price since 1995 yesterday. Now, today, the Japanese yen weakened sharply by about 3%. Because the Bank of Japan, for the first time, I think, since 2004, aggressively intervened in the currency market. Now, of course, this is very interesting because, you know, we've been criticizing the Chinese for manipulating their currency. Here's the Japanese doing the same thing, massive manipulation. No one's criticizing them. The White House isn't coming out and, you know, labeling the Japanese currency manipulators. But it's interesting, the media, the way they report on this, it's like, oh, the Japanese are intervening to support their currency, to help their economy, as if a strong yen is a problem for the Japanese economy. It's not. It's a weak dollar that's a problem for our economy. What Japan really did was they intervened to prop up the phony American economy. And here is the problem. America's broke, and there are a lot of countries and companies in Japan that are selling products to Americans. But the truth is, we're too broke. We can't afford those products. And so what these Japanese exporters are able to do is go to the Japanese government and say, look, our customers in America are broke. They don't have the money to buy our products. So we need you to take money away from Japanese citizens, give it to our American customers so they can buy our products. And the Japanese politicians bite. You know why? Because these exporters give a lot of money to their campaigns. And of course, if they save these jobs at these exporters, the politicians can pretend that they're helping the economy. But the reality is the Japanese economy would be much better off if Japan let the dollar collapse and forced their exporters to figure out how to, you know, operate their companies without American customers, how to cut back, looking for other customers in other countries or looking for customers in Japan. That's what they need to do. But in order to avoid those difficult decisions, they're able to enlist the support of Japanese politicians who intervene and subsidize American consumers to the detriment of their own citizens. And, you know, it's very similar to our own policy here in the housing market. You know, Americans are too broke to afford houses. So instead of letting the house prices fall, the government wants to subsidize the ability of bankrupt Americans to buy houses that they can't afford. And they do that by taxing the rest of America. Well, that's what's happening in Japan. Nobody wants to let the market function. Housing prices are too high. They need to come down. The dollar is too high. It needs to come down. Japan should let the dollar come down, and they should allow their companies to restructure and understand that their American customers are too broke to buy their products and that they need to reorganize. You know, it is not doing the Japanese any good to vendor finance bankrupt Americans so they can keep living beyond their means. Now, of course, in the short run, when the Japanese intervene, this benefits America's phony economy because it allows us to buy things that we can't afford. Just like when the U.S. government subsidizes, you know, zero down, low interest rates loans for Americans, yes, they benefit because they could buy a house they otherwise couldn't have afforded. But in the long run, they don't benefit when they end up losing a house to foreclosure. I mean, in the long run, the Japanese are not doing us any goods by perpetuating this dependency on foreign charity, because eventually the Japanese citizens are going to put an end to this insanity and the dollar is going to collapse even worse than it would have had it happened sooner. But watch all the news reports, the news coverage. You know, they're going to act like the Japanese economy is in trouble and they're intervening for their own sakes. We're the ones that are in trouble. It's our currency that's collapsing, and it's the Japanese government that is propping it up, just like the Chinese government is propping up the dollar. But, of course, when you have the Japanese government printing money, debasing their own currency, this is very bullish for gold. You know, gold prices pull back a little bit today, but the intervention by Japan is extremely bullish for gold. Remember, you've got the three major central banks in this world, Japan, Europe, and the United States, with practically 0% interest rates. I mean, Europe is at 1%, and, you know, the U.S. and Japan are practically zero. And those are the major currencies, the euro, the yen, and the dollar. There is no safety in any of those currencies. They are all being debased. And, of course, I think the worst one of the three is the dollar. But none of them are really any good. And so if you don't, if the major currencies are no good, then the only thing that is good is gold. And more people all around the world are going to be buying gold. Wait till gold really starts to move up. I don't even think we've started. I think it's going to start to move up $20, $50, $100 at a clip. And people are going to be talking about gold bubble, gold bubble. They'll talk about it for years. They've been talking about a gold bubble ever since gold hit 500, right? Ever since gold hit 500. I mean, we are so far from a bubble. We're not even close, right? But all this, you know, at one time, if you were going to buy gold, there was a big opportunity cost, because if you bought gold, you gave up the interest that you earned on your bank deposit. Well, now there is no interest. You don't earn anything on a bank account. So you give up nothing by owning gold. The rates on dollars are zero. The rates on gold is zero. But you know what? They're printing a lot more dollars than they are mining gold. You know, and I saw this one, you know, nut on CNBC claim that gold was overvalued because you can mine it for $400 an ounce, but it's selling for over $1,200. Well, you can only mine it for $400 an ounce if you've got a very profitable gold mine. And you know what? As a major investor in gold stocks, there aren't that many of those. There are very few gold mines, and of the mines that are out there, not many of them can mine gold at $400 an ounce. But the cost of mining it for the few people that have it has absolutely nothing to do with the price of gold. It's supply and demand that determines the price of gold. And I think supply is not going up. Demand is going way up. I think price is going to go through the roof. And what that guy on CNBC didn't understand is the fact that some gold companies can mine gold at $400 an ounce and sell it for $1,200 is a reason to buy gold stocks. That's what I've done. And I think the prices are going to go a lot higher. But, of course, before you buy any gold stocks, call up Euro Pacific Capital, 800-727-7922. Find out they're suitable for you. Find out if you can afford the risks of gold stocks going down, gold prices going down. And what? Now I lost my train of thought. I know I had something else I wanted to talk about on gold, but well, you know, it escapes my mind right now. Maybe I will think about it. I'm going to go to the phone calls, and if I think about what I was going to say, I will I'll bring it up during the phone call. So the first call I'm going to take is Mike in New York. Go ahead, Mike.
Hello.
Hey, Mike, you're on the air.
How you doing? I can barely hear you, but I'll just say what I have to say.
You can barely hear me?
Let me yeah,
try
I can
turning
hear
up my volume somewhere. Huh?
Yeah, okay, now you're better.
How's that?
Perfect.
Okay.
Privileged to be talking to you, sir.
Okay, go ahead.
Question on gold. I was reading back through your book, I think chapter 9, and you were talking about mining companies unhedging their books. I just wanted to know more information about that.
Yeah, you know, and thank you, because that's what I was going to mention. You know, there was a news announcement today out of Anglo Gold, Ashanti, AU. I own that gold, that stock myself. I've owned it for many, many years. They announced today that they're going to be issuing new shares to buy back their remaining gold hedges, which are about $1.5 billion. They're one of the last companies out there to still have a hedge book. I mean, you remember the big offender was Barrick Gold. Everybody was beating up Barrick, but you know, Barrick unwound their hedges, their last hedges, a year or two ago. Most of the gold mining companies that used to sell forward are no longer doing it. And so that used to be a big drag on the gold price, as all the major producers constantly sold futures forward, which act to depress the gold price. That's not happening anymore. And, you know, so I don't see gold companies selling gold. I mean, Anglo Gold is going to have to go buy back $1.5 billion worth of gold. That's positive for gold. You know, also, years ago, central banks were selling gold. The central banks are buying gold. You know, any central banker who sold gold in the last 10 years, I mean, look at England. England sold half of their gold reserves when gold was under $300 an ounce. How foolish do they look right now? How foolish do they look? Australia sold a bunch of its gold years and years ago at low prices. So right now, the name of the game for central banks is buying gold. Whoever can buy the most gold will be in the best shape. And so that's, you know, and that's the same thing for individuals. This is a real gold rush, whether people know it or not. You know, how many dollars you have is going to be a meaningless statistic a few years from now, I think. I think the key is going to be how many ounces of gold and silver do you have? That's what's going to separate the millionaire from the, you know, not how much dollars you have, because there could be very little difference between somebody with $1 million in their pocket and somebody with $10 in their pocket. But there'll be a big difference between somebody who has 1,000 ounces of gold and somebody who doesn't have any or only has one.
And I saw a clip of an interview with a man, I forget his name, who was the head of GATA, who mm-hmm. he thinks the gold prices have been suppressed for the past 10 years. Do you think there's any validity to that? And this is going to the suppression of gold in the market is coming to an end, and it's going to push the ascent even higher.
Yeah. I mean, there's no question that I think gold prices to some extent are manipulated. But you know what? That's fine by me, because I'm still trying to buy it. You know, and as long as I want to buy gold, if some governments are helping to keep the price low, that benefits me because we're still buying. I have not sold any of my gold. I haven't sold a single ounce of my personal holdings. I haven't sold a single gold mining share in 10 years. But I'm still buying. So the lower the price, the better I am, as far as I'm concerned. Eventually, the price is going to go through the roof, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And when it does, you know, I want to make sure that my clients that I own as much gold as possible before that happens. You know, and if somebody wants to manipulate it, it's their loss and my gain.
Cool. And do you think there's a strong possibility they might, I think you mentioned in the book that they, in the United States, they're going to try to nationalize mining companies?
I hope not.
Most of my
mining companies that I own personally are not in the United States. I mean, okay. I own some, you know, but most of my gold companies that I own are not American. And so the U.S. government can't nationalize them. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if the U.S. government starts nationalizing gold companies, believe me, they're nationalizing everything, you know, and okay. that means we would go completely commie, you know. Now, is that possible? Yeah, it is. Unfortunately, that is possible. But, you know, let's hope that that's not going to happen.
Okay. And I just background on me, I graduated in May with a geology degree. I actually applied for an entry-level job in Newmont, Nevada. But I was mm-hmm. thinking about applying for a work visa in Australia or Canada. Do you think I should beat the rush and maybe try to get outside of the United States at this point if I can?
I mean, yeah, if you're inclined to move abroad, you know, I think it's a wave that's going to continue to accelerate, particularly for younger people who are going to realize that their opportunities are limited in this country and that their freedom is being taken away. You know, I mean, the young people, unfortunately, are viewed as basically slaves. I mean, they're the people that are going to have to work so that the people who are in the baby boom and can get their Social Security and get their Medicare. The people who are in their 20s are, you know, they're just, you know, they're the ones that are caught holding the bag. So more and more young people are going to wake up to the lousy hand that they've been dealt in this country, and they're going to leave. There's no question in my mind. And it's going to pick up over the next several years. It's going to be a huge, huge trend. And as more and more Americans leave the country, it's going to make it easier for more Americans to follow. Because once some of your friends are already abroad, and you're communicating on the internet, you're Skyping each other, and you know the friends that have left the country are doing so much better economically than the ones that are still here. Well, you know, more people will go, and then it's just going to build, and it's going to, you know, be a huge momentum. And of course, that is going to further collapse our economy because there aren't going to be as many people left to tax. You know, you're going to have more and more people looking for a handout, but unfortunately, there's not going to be as much stuff left to hand out.
All right, well, that's all I had to say. So thanks very much for your insight.
Thanks, Mike.
It.
Next up from Canada, Derek. And, you know, I think Europac Canada, you know, we're making more progress now with the regulators. I think maybe we'll be up by next month. And I also found out that we will very quickly, not only do we have an office in Canada opening up in Toronto, but we are planning very soon after the Toronto office opens up to also open up an office in Vancouver. So your Pacific Capital will have two offices, one in Toronto and one in Vancouver. But anyway, go ahead, Derek.
Hey, Peter, how's it going?
Good. How are you?
Pretty good. I just finished your book, How an Economy Grows and Why It Crashes. I enjoyed it quite a bit, just picking up Crash Proof 2.0. Big fan of what you're doing. I'm a petroleum engineer in Calgary, and this place rises and falls on the price of oil. And I understand that you believe the next crash will be isolated in the U.S. because the global economy is sound, and that inflation will cause the price of oil to rise in U.S. dollars. But what about in Canadian dollars?
Well, I think the price of oil is going to rise in many currencies. I think it might fall in terms of certain currencies like the Chinese RMB, if China fully allows its currency to appreciate. Okay. But I think the rise in the price of oil will be most pronounced from a U.S. dollar perspective. But, you know, I think it will still rise relative to Canadian dollars. So, I think that the Canadian exports of oil and gas will continue to be very lucrative. So,
okay. I guess my question is, the U.S. currently consumes 25% of the world's oil, so would the U.S. economic collapse not lower the demand for oil, and then therefore
it will
the
lower
price
the,
of
it,
oil?
It will lower the demand for oil from America, right? But it will increase in other countries. I mean, imagine in China.
So you feel that China
Chinese,
and the rest of the world will pick up the slack?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, well, there are a billion Chinese. There's only 300 million Americans. Imagine, let's say that the Chinese RMB went up fivefold in terms of, you know, the dollar, right? Well, that would bring oil prices in China down by 80%, all things being equal. Now, an 80% reduction in the price of oil would likely cause a lot of people in China to want to buy cars. And in fact, if the Chinese RMB went up fivefold, cars would be a lot cheaper for the Chinese to build because steel would be a lot less expensive. So it would be a lot less expensive to build the cars, and it would be a lot less expensive to use the cars. So you can have an explosion of demand coming out of China. And so maybe the U.S. will go from consuming 25% of the world's oil to only consuming 10%. But that extra 15% that we don't buy is the 15% that the Chinese are going to buy. And the reason Americans are going to go from 25% to 10 is because a gallon of gas might go from a $2.50, $3 a gallon to $10 a gallon. And at $10 a gallon, Americans are going to drive a lot fewer miles, especially when, you know, 15% of them are unemployed.
Yeah. Okay. One more comment. Have you read The Creature from Jekyll Island by Ed Griffin?
No, I know about the book. You know, I just haven't taken the time to read it.
Okay. I was just wondering what your opinion was of his opinions.
Yeah. Thanks for the call. Next up is Benjamin in North Dakota. That used to be one of the few states that Euro-Pacific Capital was not licensed to do business. I remember there were three states years ago, but right now we have for the last many, many years, we are licensed in all 50 states. So North Dakota is certainly one state where we could do business. Anyway, go ahead, Benjamin.
Good evening, Mr. Schiff. I talked to a lot of people, you know, about what you say here and stuff, and they agree with a lot of what you're saying. The problem is I have trouble convincing them that, you know, gold and silver are two, you know, possible methods here. They seem to get it, for some reason, it seems like they get it in their head it's going to be the economic collapse, going to be like, you know, the day after tomorrow here, you know, complete collapse, you know, like that here. And I keep trying to tell them, you know, no, it's not going to be here. You know, you're not going to be able to take, you know, and they're thinking about stocking up like on barter goods. And I, again, tell them that you're not going to be able to buy a gallon of gas with cans of Spam here. That's never going to happen. And, you know, what is it that, you know, why is it that people seem to think that, you know, a dollar collapse is going to be, you know, like, you know, going back to the Stone Age here? You know, you try to point out Weimar Germany, and it doesn't click. Is there something I'm missing here that I'm not explaining to them or something, or?
I don't know. I mean, I'm not really sure, you know, what they're seeing. I mean, the dollar collapse is going to be a disaster for this economy because it's going to wipe out the savings of an entire generation. You know, you've got a lot of people who are retired that's gone. You got a lot of people that are nearing retirement. And, you know, a lot of the people who are working for government who are expecting to collect these big pensions, those pensions are going to have no value. And so a lot of people are going to be very disappointed and very poor. And the environment that is going to be created, you know, because so many Americans are going to be so frustrated and so angry. I mean, many of them are going to riot in the streets. But the question is, what is the government going to do, considering how angry these voters are? And that is the real fear. You know, Weimar Republic, Germany, is what gave way to the Nazi Party, to Adolf Hitler. Without hyperinflation, we never would have had Hitler come to power, you know, because it took that kind of environment in order to make something like that possible. So I'm not saying that we're going to get another Adolf Hitler in this country. I mean, hopefully we never get an Adolf Hitler anywhere in the world. But my point is that in that kind of environment, we can get a government far more oppressive, far more destructive to individual liberties than we could get in an environment where things are good, because people wouldn't tolerate it. But when things are really bad, people are willing to give government a lot of power if they believe the government can cure the problem, even though the government is the source of the problem. But very few people are able to identify the problem and its source. Case in point, you know, what just happened.
All right. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you for the call. Hope you enjoy the books. Next is Will in Wyoming. Go ahead, Will.
Yeah, hi, Peter.
How are you?
Yeah, hi. Peter, I wanted to talk to you because I know you own a lot of gold and silver mining stocks. And I'm sure that a lot of the mines from these companies, regardless of where they're headquartered, I'm sure a lot of these companies have mines in Mexico. And would you please talk to us about, you know, Mexico from an investment perspective? Because, you know, there's a lot of reports about violence and things like that down there. But Mexico's where some of the best gold and silver companies are, or at least where they operate. So could you
talk about
Mexico and what's going on in the investment, you know, outlook?
Yeah, I mean, I own companies personally for clients that have mines in Mexico that mine down there, and I think it is a good location for gold mining, and there are some quality mines down there. The violence that we're having in Mexico right now is mainly related to the drug trade, and it's very unfortunate because that is a byproduct of our ridiculous war on drugs. Because drugs are illegal in the United States, there is organized crime. And because it's not, you know, and most of the drugs that are sold on American streets come in from other countries. And, you know, the best way to end all that drug violence in Mexico, and America can end it tomorrow. You know, Mexico is powerless. There's nothing Mexican can do. We have created this problem. We have done this to Mexico. If we simply legalized drugs, then we would put an end to all the violence in Mexico. And, of course, we would put the end to organized crime and violence here on our own streets. If we simply, you know, allow doctors to prescribe drugs, you know, marijuana or cocaine, you know, the way they prescribe other drugs, if we, you know, we would solve these problems. I mean, I don't use drugs myself. I don't use marijuana. I don't use cocaine. I don't use any of these drugs. And if they were legal, I still wouldn't use them. But I would rather have drugs prescribed by doctors than pushed by gangsters on the streets. I think if somebody wanted to buy cocaine, I'd rather have them go to a doctor and try to convince the doctor to write them a prescription, because at least the doctor could try to educate them on why they shouldn't use cocaine. But, of course, the pusher's not going to do that. The pusher wants an addict because he wants a customer. And so it is a disgrace. The war on drugs has not only hurt the American economy, creating crime in our own country, but we've created crime around the world, particularly south of the border, and most particularly now in Mexico. And it is, you know, it is a very, very unfortunate byproduct of American politicians who refuse to see the reality because of the political area. And I understand that, you know, when I ran for Senate too, you know, I was specific in that I was not going to take on the war on drugs. I didn't want to take it on because I didn't want to fear for my own life from the drug gangsters who might have killed me if they actually thought I was going to take away their profits. But I know that even in the Republican Party, so many Republicans, you know, are so anti-drugs. I mean, what they don't understand, you know, and Republicans are smart in some areas, but very dumb in other areas. You know, Republicans, rightfully, a lot of Republicans are against using marijuana, are against using cocaine. And yeah, I mean, there's a lot of evidence that those drugs are harmful and that people shouldn't use them. But then again, you have to look at the intentions versus, you know, the actual result. And the result of the war on drugs, I think, is that more people use drugs. And instead of drugs being a health problem, they're now a health problem and a criminal problem. And, you know, whereas Republicans can often see the unintended consequences of economic policy, a bad economic policy, they don't see the unintended consequences of drug policy. Whereas on the other hand, you have a lot of people on the left and the Democrats that want to decriminalize or legalize drugs because they understand some of the negative, but they're completely clueless when it comes to the economy. You know, so it's kind of hard to find somebody that's consistently right. And if they are, it's hard to find a home in either one of those parties. I know in the Libertarian Party, you get that type of thinking. But unfortunately, Libertarians can't elect anybody. So I was not able to run as a Libertarian. I ran as a Republican. And so I chose to stay out of the drug issue, although it did come up from time to time that I thought a drug should be decriminalized. And of course, I would not argue with that. I do think they should be decriminalized. I just claim that as a senator, had I been elected, I was not going to try to introduce any legislation to bring that about. Not that I thought that anybody would vote for it. I mean, if I tried to introduce a bill to, legalize marijuana, for example, there'd be very few congressmen that would have the guts to vote for it. Anyway, hope that answered your question.
Well, just more specifically, Are you concerned at all with, you know, some of these smaller companies that maybe, you know, these powerful cartels trying to shake them down for some money or interfere in some way with their operation? Is that a concern?
No, that's not a concern. I mean, look, you know, you've got those problems. Look, there's gold mines all around the world, and a lot of the places where the gold mines are very politically unstable. So as far as, you know, on the Richter scale of political stability, I think Mexico is pretty high up there, you know, for these places. So I'm not worried. But, you know, I own gold stocks all around the world. I own gold mines all around the world. So, you know, as I said, over the years, I've had a couple of mining stocks that I've owned that have gone bankrupt. But you know what? I have so many others that have gone up 10 times or 20 times. So, you know, I know that some of them are going to have problems, but others are not, you know. And so my strategy is I just own a lot of gold stocks and a lot of silver stocks. And I hope that diversity is going to protect me from the few that end up having problems.
Well, it's just that, you know, other than this negative news that we hear from time to time, Mexico is an excellent environment for mining companies. And,
well, I agree.
It's a shame that they have to deal with this sideshow that's going on in the background, you know?
Well, as I said, that is a byproduct of our war on drugs. And unfortunately, since our politicians are never going to do anything about that, Mexico is going to have to continue to deal with this problem. But anyway, thanks for the call.
Okay. Thank you.
Next up is John in Maryland, I think. Go ahead, John.
Oh, hey, Peter Schiff. I was actually wondering two things. One is I'm actually writing a paper for one of my classes, how to protect a portfolio from the coming currency collapse. And you said in your book, Crash Proof, that foreign stocks would be a good yield because you're paid in other currencies. I was wondering.
You want to make sure that you have companies that are earning their revenues outside the United States, so they collect earned revenues in these currencies and pay dividends in these currencies. And, you know, I mean, I think the best thing to do is not to have U.S. stocks. I mean, that's the bottom line. And if you're going to own U.S. stocks, own U.S. stocks that earn as much money as possible from exports. My main fear, though,
wondering,
you know, let me finish this point. Let me finish this point. My main fear on owning the U.S. exporters is that when the things collapse, and all of a sudden, the only U.S. companies that are making good profits are the exporters. The government might impose very draconian windfall profit taxes on those companies, and I think that is a real concern. So the minute the exporters start to make a lot of money, the U.S. government might take it away. That's called political risk, and I think the political risk in the United States is among the highest in the world. So that's why I want to avoid investing here. And it's very unfortunate that the government has created a situation where it's so dangerous to invest in the United States, but unfortunately, that's the reality.
Okay, thanks. You made some good points I'm going to add to my paper. Thank you. And my last two questions is, one, I'm very bullish on oil. I was wondering what you thought. And two, I'm very bullish on Indonesian economy. I was wondering what you thought of that.
I am very bullish on oil. I said that earlier in the program. I think it's going higher. You know, we don't have a lot of Indonesian investments. We have some. I do like Southeast Asia, and, you know, Indonesia is part of that. Indonesia, the Philippines, Thailand, you know, I think all those economies are very interesting, these, you know, emerging markets. And, you know, I think they will way outperform investments in the United States.
All right. Thank you very much for the advice and everything. And all right, have a good one.
All right, thank you. Next up is going to be Bob in Virginia. Go ahead, Bob.
Peter, thank you for taking my call.
Thank you for calling.
A year ago, I read Crash Proof, and then I thought it was such a good book that I bought several copies of Crash Proof 2.0, read one of those books, and handed out a bunch of them to my friends and families, coworkers. And only a couple people have responded to what I think is the absolute truth in those books that you wrote. And it's kind of frustrating to see that learning from you, having to be in a business major in Keynesian economics, I've been turned on. I want to thank you for, you know, introducing me to Austrian economics, studying it more. It just makes such good sense to follow. So I want to just
I mean, economics makes sense. It's the Keynesian economics that's nonsense. I mean, in order to believe that, I mean, that's why they have to come up with all these complicated formulas. because what they're saying on the surface is not, it's like, you know, it's crazy. But they try to, they try to validate it with all these formulas, and they try to make it sound like you need to have some kind of PhD in economics to understand this. But the reality is, real economics, you don't need all that education, because it basically makes sense.
I got a question for you. In studying economic history, especially the Weimar Republic, which I heard a couple of guys mention earlier, do you think our economy is going to be a gradual collapse and then a gradual decline and then a collapse? Or do you believe, like the Weimar Republic, they came out of it, they printed so much money, they came out of the depression they were in, and for a few months they enjoyed prosperity, you know, full employment, everything was well, then it went to hyperinflation. How do you think the course of this country will?
Well, there's no. I think it's going to be a slow grind until it cascades into an avalanche. I think it's because I think things are going to just get worse slowly as the world continues to support us. But at some point, there will be an epiphany. The world will stop, and then the collapse will accelerate. And depending on how the government reacts, depends on whether or not we have hyperinflation or just severe inflation. In order to avoid hyperinflation, we're going to have to allow interest rates to rise sharply. The government is going to have to allow a lot of banks and corporations to fail and not bail them out. The government is going to have to admit that it can't afford to make interest payments, let alone principal payments on the national debt. And the government is going to have to restructure that debt, which is going to involve a default. The government is going to have to allow many states and municipalities to default on their debts and not bail them out. And the government is going to have to level with people on Social Security and Medicare that there's not enough money to pay them what was promised and severely reduce the benefits. If the government does all that stuff, all that painful stuff, then we won't have hyperinflation. But if they refuse to do all that stuff, then we will have hyperinflation. So that's what we're looking at.
And what kind of time frame do you think this could possibly be, Peter? 2 years, 5 years down the road, or
it could be. I mean, it could be in the next couple of years, in the next 5 years. There is no way for me to know, because it already doesn't make sense. It's like I'm trying to. It's like, when is a bubble going to pop? You don't know. This is the mother of all bubbles, right? There's a lot of air already in it. You know, how much more air? How much more room there is for more air? You know, I don't know. And that is the problem, because the longer it goes on, the more people think, you know, it's that, you know, the bigger a bubble inflates, the more people feel that it will never pop. And that is the problem. And, you know, a lot of people, you know, I got criticized a lot for calling the housing bubble years in advance, you know, and for several years as housing prices kept rising and I kept talking bubble, 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 it simply made this, they used that to discredit me. And, you know, the same thing is happening now. Oh, yo, Schiff is saying the dollar is going to collapse. But look, it's not collapsing. I know it hasn't collapsed yet. But look at all the artificial support. Look at what China's doing. Look at what Japan is doing. I mean, if you can't see that we're a currency on the verge of collapse, I mean, you've got to be blind. But unfortunately, you know, the bigger a bubble is, the fewer people can spot it. Because the bigger the bubble is, the more people who are trapped inside it. And when you're trapped inside it, you can't tell you're in it.
And that's the truth. Thank you, Peter, for taking my call.
Take care. Only have two more callers, so no more calls today. Two more callers. Let me take the international caller first. It's Johnny calling from Denmark. Go ahead, Johnny.
Hello?
John. Yes, Peter Schiff, you're on the air.
Hi, Peter. Like everybody else, I want to thank you for learning me everything about economics. I have a degree in economics, but I learned nothing on all those years in the university, even though we are paid to go to university in Denmark, but you opened my eyes, and I want to say thank you for that.
Well, but, you're welcome.
My question to you is, I live in Denmark, which is not a part of the euro, but we are linked to the euro in 2% range. I'm afraid that because of America is the biggest and the strongest country in the world, in the military and at least in history, I'm afraid that the euro will pop before the U.S. dollar is doing it, even though euro is have a better on balance. We have a net saver and we are net exporter, but even though I'm afraid the euro will pop first. So what would your advice be to me as a euro holder?
Well, look, own a lot of gold, but I do disagree in that I do believe that the dollar will succumb to the disease of fiat currencies before the euro. Yes, we are a military power, but so is the Soviet Union, and it crumbled all the same. You know, we're a military power because we can borrow money.
Good point.
If we can't borrow money, we aren't a power because we don't have the resources to pay for the military. We can't supply the troops. We can't pay the troops. So I think that you know, our military might will quickly deteriorate along with the value of our currency. I do not believe. See, there are some people who believe that we will use our military might to blackmail the world. That we will tell the world, lend us money, buy our treasury, send us consumer goods, or we will nuke you. See, I don't think that is going to happen. I mean, Americans aren't evil. Our government isn't evil. I mean, we're not going to blackmail people. We're not going to kill people on purpose. I mean, what's happening is not, you know, Americans, they're not bad. They're just misguided. I mean, politicians are doing what's in their own self-interest. They're trying to get reelected, and many of them actually don't know enough about economics. There are actually some people in Washington that actually believe the bullshit that they tell their constituents. But they're not bad people. They're not going to hold the world hostage. So
I totally agree with you, and I just hope that America will find its way again, because I look up to the way you Americans used to think about liberty, the things you stand for, Ron Paul stands for. We don't have that kind of movement in Europe at all, and that's a shame.
It is a total shame that the America of that, you know, my father was born into no longer exists. The ideals that our founding fathers inscribed into our Constitution no longer exist. That's unfortunate. I'd like to bring those ideas back in America, but if we can't, then hopefully some other country will pick up the torch. You know, and if America isn't going to be the land of the free and the home of the brave, hopefully there'll be other parts of the world that are, so that our children in America will have a place to go. Anyway, thanks for the call.
Okay, bye-bye. Thank you.
The last caller of the day is Renee in New York. Go ahead, Renee.
Hi, Peter. Thanks for sharing your wisdom and knowledge with us. I really appreciate it.
Sure, thanks for calling.
I want to make a comment and ask a question. How much of the market crash do you think is due to the government defaulting on their obligation to senior citizens? I'm calculating, like, World War One ended in 1918, and retirement for those baby boomers was 62, and that brings us to 1980, where the market, you know, where we had very high inflation and gold and silver, you know, went to the moon. And then World War Two ended in 1945, and then again, 62 years later would bring us to 2007, where the market crashed, and that's for early retirement.
So what's your point?
How much of this defaulting on their obligation to senior citizens?
Well, the government is going to default because there's no way. See, there's no way that the younger generation, Americans who are in their teens, in their 20s, in their 30s, they don't have the income to enable the baby boom to collect the Social Security and Medicare benefits that politicians promised them in order to get their votes. So the baby boom is not going to get paid, and it's going to happen in one or two ways. Either they're not going to get paid because the government's going to acknowledge that they don't have the money and cut the benefits, or they're going to get paid in money that has very little value. And either way, they're not going to get the purchasing power that they need. I mean, that is just going to happen. And if we try to maintain the illusion that we're going to pay these benefits by increasing taxes on the young people, then they will leave. And now maybe we'll force them to stay. Maybe the government will make it illegal for people to leave. That is another fear that I have. And people think, oh, that's crazy. That'll never happen. Well, you know, every country that made it illegal for people to leave, before that happened, I'm sure anybody who lived there thought that that notion would have been crazy. But it always happens. You know?
And I want to. I've purchased gold and silver, but like everyone who has, I don't have enough. So I'm waiting for the next market crash. During a market crash, does it become harder or easier to purchase silver, gold and silver?
Listen, I don't know. I mean, it might become harder as the price is rising. I mean, you know, ultimately, you know, when the market collapsed in 2008, gold and silver prices went down with the market. But they came up, and now they're higher than they were before the crash. But I think when the real crash happens, and that's going to be a crash not just in the U.S. stock market, but more importantly, a bigger crash in the U.S. bond market and in the U.S. dollar. When that real crash happens, gold and silver prices will go straight up. That's what I think is going to happen. So I don't think you want to wait till then to buy. You don't want to buy gold when it's going up, you know, $100 a day or more. You want to buy it now, because when it's going up at that rapid pace, a lot of people will be too afraid to buy. So, you know, it's, I think it's much better to buy when it's calmer.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, thank you very much.
All right, well, thank you, and let's just make that the last caller. We have a few more minutes. So, again, you know, let me remind everybody, if you want to buy physical precious metals, you know, go to my new company, EuropacMetals.com, Europac, EuropaC Metals, ETAL, I think that's what it is, .com. That's my new company. The number to call is 1-888-GOLD-160, 1-888-GOLD-160. For individual stocks, Perth Mint, to have gold in Australia, call Euro Pacific Capital, 800-727-7922. Make sure, whether it's gold or foreign stocks, talk to one of my brokers. Make sure you understand all the risks. Gold can go down. Gold stocks can go down. Foreign stocks can go down. So make sure you understand the risks before you invest. And, of course, make sure and pick up my book, Crash Proof 2.0, the revised little book of bull moves, and also How an Economy Grows and Why It Crashes. Again, thanks, everybody, for listening. This has been Peter Schiff, Wall Street Unspun. Be back again next week, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, on Europac.net. Take care, everybody.